Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Little college football news coming out yesterday. It was announced that Colorado will be leaving the Pac-12 and headed to the Big 12. And I know that the population of Colorado football fans in Nashville is probably a whopping four people, give or take, over under four. But I do think this has a general undertones of college football conference realignment. Because I think what we saw when Texas and Oklahoma, it was rumored that they were going to join the SEC. We learned, okay, it wasn't just a rumor, it was something that had been in the works. Texas and Oklahoma announced they were joining the SEC. Then all of a sudden, USC and UCLA announced that they're joining the Big Ten. Then all of a sudden, Cincinnati, BYU, UCF, Houston, they announced that they're moving to the Big 12. It's just one move. It was a domino effect. And then every other conference and several other teams in all of college football were directly affected. So since USC and UCLA decided to leave the Pac-12, the question was, okay, who's going to be next? What's going to be the next domino to fall? Which next big-time college football powerhouse is going to abandon maybe the ACC or the Pac-12 to join a more stable conference? Now, Colorado is no big-time football powerhouse, but they're going home. Going back to the Big 12, I think it makes sense.
They were just there.
They were just there. What, was your time in the Pac-12 not good enough?
At least there's a geographical sensibility to this. I think it makes more sense for them to be in the Big 12. I think it's a bigger, I guess it's a gain for the Big 12, but it's a bigger loss for the Pac-12, don't you think?
I would agree. Even though they're not, you know, the USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon of the Pac-12, I think it's maybe putting a little bit of sense of uncertainty into those big-time powerhouses in the Pac-12. So when I saw this, my initial thought was, whoa, okay, great for Colorado, but what does this mean for the Pac-12? Like, is this the beginning of the end of the Pac-12?
Well, it could be, because it seems like the Big 12 want Arizona State, or Utah as well. So, and they want that to happen very quickly. So it's just, you're basically, the Pac-12 is going to become, you know, the Pac-8 or whatever.
Which it used to be.
Yeah, which
way,
it used
way
to be.
Back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're just correcting ourselves.
Yeah, we're correcting everything. But I just think it gets it closer to what college football is going to ultimately be. It's just going to be two or three conferences, major conferences, and that's it. Unfortunately, you know, for the Pac-12, you know, especially if these other three schools or one of these other three schools ends up leaving as well, then who are you going to go get? I mean, what other teams can you bring into your conference that is going to lift your conference back up?
Like San Diego State was thrown around in there, potentially joining the Pac-12. But,
bringing
in San Diego State doesn't
them.
Replace what you lose in USC and UCLA.
Exactly.
And then out Colorado.
And then potentially another school. Right now I just think the Pac-12 is, they're on an island almost by themselves. And it seems like that's what it's going to be. And now I think the ACC might end up being in that boat sooner or later as well. They got to try to hold on to their teams within their conference, the Florida States, Clemson's, and teams of that nature. So, you know, it seems like it's coming down to three conferences, the Big Ten, SEC, and the Big 12.
Funny how the Big 12 is invited onto the table.
And I don't know, like, remember the Big 12 is losing.
Yeah, they're
Texas
losing teams.
Two of the biggest powerhouses.
I think there was a lot of worry that they would not be in the same league as the two big ones, and it still remains to be seen whether the other three, as we know as the Power Five, will still exist in their current form in 5 or 10 years. There's a lot of speculation that it's not that they just won't year after year be able to hang with the Big Ten and the SEC. The ACC, we had that uproar during the offseason about, hey, look, you got to let the strong horses get a little bit bigger. piece of the pie, or else we got to look to get out of here. They're hanging on to that legal agreement that they made, but you can see the awareness of if every year we're making $30 million less than our competitors that we have to beat for a national championship, we're only going to fall further and further behind. And that's the case of all three of those leagues compared to the Big Ten and the SEC. So how do they strengthen themselves? That's what's going on right. in the undercurrent of this.
If I'm trying to look at it from the point of view of the big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon, Washington, I'll throw Utah in there, maybe Arizona State, but really more so Oregon and Washington.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, from their perspective, I think it could be one of two different ways. One way, they could look at it and say, with no USC and UCLA, and Colorado, you know, we're not a good team.
Yeah, exactly.
We can run the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pac-12 can negotiate another big-time TV deal that we now have to divide up between three fewer schools than we previously did. And we can run the conference. And we'll get a really good shot at making college football playoff every single year. And that's something that those individual schools can negotiate with the Pac-12 and with the media rights of, look, we could easily get it, one, maybe even two teams in a 12-team playoff moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big-time payout for those programs. So Oregon and Washington can look at it and say, fine, if you want to leave, leave. And we'll sit back and enjoy the fruits of a smaller conference. But on the other side, I could also see the Oregons and the Washingtons start to panic of we're becoming more and more irrelevant of a conference mm-hmm. as time goes on.
Well, as long as the avenue to get to the college football playoffs stays wide, meaning, you know, get to that 12 team, as long as it stays there, then they will always have an opportunity to make the college football playoffs. That's why I can't, unless the money is so great in those other conferences, then we're going to leave. But why Colorado leaves, you got USC, UCLA leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, now the Big 12 trying to figure, they want Arizona State or Utah, one of those teams. Say if they get one of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Oregon, what are my incentives to leave other than, you know, the payout I would get yearly? Because if I stay in this conference and dominate this conference, I'm going to playoffs every year. You know, only thing I need to do is schedule some one or two hard games outside the conference. We win one of the two against top 20 caliber teams or top 15 caliber teams. We put ourselves in a position every year. It's like a default. We're going to make it as long as we keep our program the way it is.
That's the question, because it's one thing to say we can compete every year because if we win our league, we have an automatic bid
mm-hmm.
into the playoffs. But where it gets complicated is if the rich get richer,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term, what will it be like for the second-place team in the new Big 12 or the new Pac-12? Will they have enough oomph with the strength of schedule?
Mm-hmm.
Will they continue to have the TV audiences to where you can still get in there as an at-large? Because it just seems like there's more gravitational pull towards the horses and the two big leagues.
Well,
and the recruiting, you know, well, in theory, the recruiting will keep moving in that direction because
right.
these teams will have more money to spend on players, so to speak. Right? NIL,
right.
all that, to have more revenue to pull from.
Well, and then
you're
going to
get more buy-in from collectives or donors or alumni or fans or whatever it might be. If you're making
you
the playoffs every year.
You would think.
In theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think, again, you know, what helps is, you know, you would probably have, you know, you would probably say an Oregon. Let's just say an Oregon because they've been consistently a good team. You would be in the driver's seat just
mm-hmm.
about every year because, you know, your campus, your locker room, all this stuff that they do at Oregon, you're going to get you some athletes. So every year you're going to be in the driver's seat as far as getting into the playoffs. Now, what may hurt them is this, the SEC going to this 9-game conference thing where they can't schedule as many teams outside of conference. That may hurt them in a sense because maybe a team in the SEC doesn't want to play them. They're thinking like, if we're going to schedule our out-of-conference games, we're going to schedule those two or three cakewalks because we know we got a gauntlet to go through in the SEC. We're not going to schedule, you know, Oregon or say another top tier team that could potentially beat us. We're not going to schedule them because we don't. We only have so many we can schedule.
Right.
Like, it's almost like we want to schedule games we know we can win because our conference is so tough that if we win all of our games in conference, then we should make the playoffs. But I'm not going to schedule an Oregon, you know, every year and them beat us. And I still got to go through a gauntlet in my SEC? No, I'm not doing that.
One texter texts into the text line, phone line, Drip Mobiles, and Hyundai.com. Says she keeps talking about Oregon and Washington being the big dogs of the Pac-12. They haven't won it. The last 2 years, it's been Utah. She has no idea what she's talking about. This comes from a Utah area code, so I think I have upset the Ute fans.
Yes, the Utes.
When I talk about the big dogs, Washington gets three times the number of household shares in terms of TVs and actual households that are watching Pac-12 games. Washington has three times as many as Utah. Oregon has 2.5 times as many as Utah. I mean, Missouri's been to the SEC championship twice more than Texas A&M has since they've joined the SEC. But I would say that households and TVs and the TV market for Texas A&M is more valuable than it is in Missouri. So we're talking about two different things. I understand that Utah's won back-to-back Pac-12 championships. But when you're talking about TV deals and your value in a conference, it has everything to do with households and TVs and cable and money and a lot less to do with on the field contribution. So to that, I say, I do know what I'm talking about. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Okay, Pac-12, it's in limbo. Colorado's leaving, going back to the Big 12. USC and UCLA, as we know, are headed to the Big 10. What does that mean for the SEC? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
I'm proud to say, in my view, and I think in the view of our entire membership, the Southeastern Conference is stronger now than at any other time in our history. We're poised to grow to 16 members on July 1st, 2025. This expansion keeps the SEC in contiguous states, which supports a reasonable geography among like-minded universities and keeps us confident that fan interest will continue to grow in our communities, in our region, in this country, and literally across the globe. There's no sense of urgency in our league, no panic in reaction to others' decisions. We know who we are, we are confident in our collective strength, and we are uniquely positioned to continue to provide remarkable experiences educationally and athletically, along with world-class support to student-athletes.
That was Greg Sankey of last year's SEC Media Days, so July 2022. And remember last summer, this was the USC-UCLA to the Big Ten summer. So everyone was all, you know, buzzing about what does this mean for college football? Are we going to have a Big Two with two power conferences between the Big Ten and the SEC? A whole lot of uncertainty about conference realignment. And I think one thing that we've learned about conference realignment is it gets real quiet until it doesn't anymore. That it's, you know, it's mum is the word, and then all of a sudden one team decides something, or a pair of teams decide one thing, or a conference decides one thing, and all of a sudden it is pure bedlam. No Oklahoma pun intended. So that's what I wonder. With Colorado leaving the Pac-12 to go back to the Big 12. Is that simply just a minor move isolated to Colorado? It made the most sense for them at the time. Or is that now putting an Oregon, a Washington on watch, and now they are starting to negotiate where their next stop is going to be? And does the SEC get involved in that? Because Greg Sankey said last summer, hey, we're at 16. We have no intention of growing beyond 16 at this time. But it's no longer this time, Greg. It's now a new time of college football with Colorado leaving the Pac-12. So is this where the SEC starts to look into potentially poaching an Oregon, a Washington, a team from the Pac-12 that may be interested in leaving?
I don't understand what it does for your conference. You know, going to get a Washington or an Oregon or Utah. What does that do? Does it strengthen your conference? I don't think it strengthens your conference. I think right now you have the, you know, strongest conference in college football. So what advantage does the SEC gets other than from a possibly recruiting standpoint? What other standpoint, what's the advantage of bringing in Oregon, Utah, one of these teams out west? I don't know what the advantage for them to do that. Now, obviously the advantage bringing in USC and UCLA, those are two, you know, historical, you know, universities or programs, you know. So you bringing them in there, now you get to recruit real heavy on the West Coast with those two particular teams. But other than that, how does it help the SEC that they go out and get another team? I don't see how it helps. It's not you're not bringing in a powerhouse. The powerhouse is left from a historical standpoint, I think.
You know? Also, we're seeing a lot of challenges that the league is trying to combat when Oklahoma and Texas join the league, scheduling being right at the top of the list. After to get past 16, I mean, it's hard enough with 16, but aren't we getting into a practical area where you've hit a limit? Like, I thought 12 should have been the limit. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, they're not going to go past 12, and then they went to 14, and then to 16. So they keep pushing the envelope. But 16 with 8 aside, that seems at least like you could still try to deal with it. I don't like it. I think 16 is too big. But could you possibly go higher than 16? Is it really a conference at that point? It's like more than like a league.
It's a league. It's no longer conferences. But then again, and we've expressed, you know, this in regards to, you know, this conference realignment. What about the other sports? You know, they travel more than football.
Yeah, it's basketball. Hard to ship the cross-country team from Rutgers to L.A.
Exactly.
On a bus. And I'm with you. And I hear you because I think that's kind of an unintended consequence of conference realignment is, well, what do the non-revenue sports do whenever they're going across the country once a week?
Now you're going to have to give them more money.
But nobody cares about that because football's the king. Football brings in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So you take the check from football and then you'll just say, okay, we'll figure everything else out later. I don't like it, but I think that's kind of the way that they view it.
Yeah. But then, I mean, if you're willing, listen, you can make anything work if you're willing to put the money toward it, okay? They can make, you know, the other sports work if they're willing to put the money, you know, as far as their travel, you know, them traveling like the football team travels on a plane by themselves, them having nice hotels to stay in, you know, meals and everything else. That can be done if they want to, but are they going to want to when it comes to the other sports outside of football? Because some of these colleges, their basketball program may be better, or their baseball program, honestly, may be better than their football program.
Yeah,
you know,
right, and the money drives everything, and it's not even close. Like the best that's you know, ask any of the old Big East coaches or the old ACC coaches.
Right,
the basketball coaches are bitter that some of the greatest
they grew
time,
that conference,
the ACC and the Big East in the '80s, the '90s, it was such a great thing, and now it's totally different than it was. There's way more teams. The original Big East is not what it was. It's different now. It's like. Like, there's bitterness among some of the old guard coaching that remembers, like, a golden age. But football has just driven everything for the last 20, 30 years now. And it's not going to change. So there is – Rick Neuheisel brought this up.
Right.
Should you have a football model and then all other sports model? Conferences for football. And then the rest of the leagues make more geographic sense. I'd be willing to look into that.
And I think that would make the most sense. But then how would you do TV?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the tough thing. And how would you do scheduling? And I think for me, it doesn't make any sense right now for the SEC to expand. Because I do think genuinely the SEC wants to maintain at least some sort of geographical relevancy. Like, I know that Oklahoma and Missouri being in the SEC doesn't make a ton of sense, but it makes a whole lot more sense than a school in LA being in the Big Ten. I do think they want to maintain that. And I think right now it's you walk before you run, and you let your league and you let the fans and you let your TV deal kind of play out and get acclimated to this new SEC before you continue to change. But there might be a time where Greg Sankey has to force his hand. because I don't think it makes sense for the big for the SEC to expand. But maybe the Big Ten is thinking, hey, we'll take you. It makes sense for us right now. Mm-hmm. So to be competitive, what does the SEC do to combat that? Are they going to be the first ones to strike, or can the SEC sit back and say, look, our league with 16 teams already is more dominant and better than any other league in the country. So you go ahead, you poach more teams, we'll sit back and we'll enjoy our TV share as we have it. It's an interesting little war.
I hope, hopefully that is the sort of the approach or the sentiment of the SEC. Because outside of possibly Clemson, Florida State, University of Miami, can y'all think of another team that could potentially come in and be worth even, you know, joining the SEC? I think the SEC has the dominant teams. You know, they went out and got Oklahoma and Texas. What more do you know? Only thing they could have done that would have made it better is get those two and USC and UCLA. But they didn't. I think right now, as much as I love the Big Ten, I think top to bottom, the SEC is the best conference from top to bottom.
I don't even think that you can even really argue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Big Ten is bringing in the most money per team.
Exactly.
Because of the TV deals that they're striking. And that's even without Notre Dame, which a lot of people are wondering over the next few years, what will Notre Dame do? Will they re-up with NBC? Will NBC...
Now, that could be the caveat right there.
Because remember, NBC is a television partner now with the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. So there might be some talks of, like, what's better... Notre Dame will be driving it a lot, right? It's like, what's better for Notre Dame, to stay independent or to go Big Ten? Well, I think there's a scenario where they just stay with NBC. NBC kicks up, you know, their money to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is still a powerhouse.
The only way I can see the SEC changing is if Notre Dame and, say, a Clemson or Florida State goes to the Big Ten. And then I think they would be forced to bring in two more teams. But outside of those two teams, or say a Notre Dame and a Clemson, Notre Dame, FSU, Notre Dame, U of M.
Right.
Outside of that, why would the SEC even add more teams?
Money. That's why they did it in the first place, and that's why I
didn't think they needed.
But they didn't think they needed Oklahoma and Texas.
But
the money, I didn't either.
Yeah. But the money is
they cashed
going
in
to,
on it.
Yeah, but the money is going to be there, because if you bring two more teams now, that means it doesn't mean you're getting more money.
It's like it's
you
like
got to divide more money.
The old saying, how much is enough?
Yeah.
How much is enough? Right? They're making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Why do they need more money? But some people
tell
are
that
like,
to the rich guys.
Right, right.
They're cashing in on some of these
But
games.
Wouldn't they have to rework their television deal if indeed that happens?
And also, if this is the thing I've always had a problem with. Okay, yeah, you're making more money. But if it ruins the rest of college football, and now you don't like – isn't there a certain strength of having the entire country and having five really good leagues? You hope to keep your edge over those other leagues, but the Big Ten and the SEC are kind of killing these other leagues. It's become the big
and I think
power two
like it like
and
that.
The other. Yeah, but it's not good for college football.
Isn't that how the world operates as well? It may not be good for the world, but it's good for
those
that's
what few. I'm saying.
It's they good, got it all.
It's good for the money.
Well, the NFL is they go for parity, right? Parity is what drives the league, and it keeps everybody competitive. Every team feels like they have a chance to compete. That's not how college football is built, right? And so which way are we going? Like, I like when there's five great power conferences. I like that.
I'm with you. I like the traditionalism of college football, and I think those days now are behind us. And it makes me sad as a college football fan that it does have a very different look and feel to it. And it's almost like college football wants to cash in on the money that the NFL gets, but doesn't have the same governing body and principles and boundaries that the NFL has. Nor do I think they want it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on this. But coming up next, some of the biggest questions for teams across the league. We will get into those coming up next. Hey, tune into Chase McCabe's show and our show, Caroline, Willie, and D-Maze, tomorrow as we broadcast live from Titans training camp. We'll get player interviews and deliver the latest updates with Titans practice as the team preps for the 2023 season. Coverage of Titans training camp is presented by the Simmons Bank Open, Parman Energy, and Caudill Vet Clinic. Caroline Willie DeMays.
I had one of those last week, so don't feel bad. Or earlier this week.
Whoa, yeah, old habits die hard. 1025, 1063, the game. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025, 1063, the game and the Game Nashville app. This week's Nashville's best deal is Joyland in East Nashville. Joyland burgers will melt in your mouth. The fries are crispy goodness, and the milkshakes are sure to satisfy any sweet tooth. So get half off a $30 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. So I heard this is something we started when I was gone, and I like it. Some of the biggest questions surrounding teams in the NFL, AFC, NFC. Which would we like to start with this week, AFC or NFC teams?
Let's start with the AFC.
All right, with the AFC. So we've decided biggest question for the Chargers today.
Well, I think the biggest question for the Chargers to me is in light of them now signing Justin Herbert to the big deal, which we knew they were going to do, is why haven't they won while he's been on that first contract? This is their last year with him under the reasonable first contract, so it's now or never. They also have Austin Eckler, who doesn't like the money he's making. He's worried about his next deal, which he should be. So I see a lot
it's
of
a trend at that position.
Strong pieces that have not fit together very well. And then they have the scars from last year not winning the playoff game where they had full control of the game. So there's a lot of the Chargers are such a fascinating team from a lot of angles. It's in the AFC where the Titans are trying to stay relevant and get in there. You hope that teams like the Chargers screw it up. You know, you need a few teams to have the wheels come off. They've obliged the last couple of years. Now they barely got in there. They got into the playoffs last year, which was a step forward, and they brought their coaching staff back, etc. But man, I look at individual players on that team, and I'm like, wow, that team should win. But they haven't. And then there's the fantasy angle, too. Like, who do you want? Like, you've got some really exciting guys. Like, if you look at your fantasy league every week, either on your team or the guys, the people you're playing, it's littered with Chargers. They're everywhere, right? Yeah. Because they got a lot of guys. But it just has not all worked out for them. Is this the year? I don't. It's hard to bet on them based on the history.
Yeah, the Chargers' history, I don't care if they're San Diego or L.A., it's just not good, okay? This is a team that at one point was, you know, arguably one of the best teams in the National Football League. And for whatever reason, with Phillip Rivers and LT and Junior, they just couldn't win. They couldn't get over that hump. And then, you know, you fast forward many years later, they're still in that position where they have a franchise quarterback. They have a running back that is damn good in Austin Eckler, a versatile running back. They have receivers in Johnson. Was it Johnson? Williams and Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. So, and then Quentin Johnson as well.
And Josh Palmer's not bad.
Yeah, and Palmer's not bad at all. They have the tight ends. Everett, he bought out last year. That guy, he's a good player. But just look at this. Think about this. On defense, when you have Asante Samuel Jr., you have Darwin James, J.C. Jackson, Khalil Mack. I know he's not the Khalil Mack he used to be, but he's still a good player.
Joey Bosa.
Austin. This defense is a top-notch defense. And the guys you have on offense, and you got a franchise quarterback, a top-10 quarterback, and you still have trouble winning ball games. The Chargers have to. How do they stay healthy for one? Because it seems like they always get injured at the either early on in the season they got to fight their way up, or they get hurt later in the season and they're trying to figure things out. This team has been snake bitten more than I think just about any other team, considering the talent that they've had on their teams dating back to San Diego.
So what's your biggest question for the Chargers going into this season?
Can Brandon Staley, with this conference adding Sean Payton as head coach with the Denver Broncos, can this team elevate themselves? Because now Denver becomes a player because of Sean Payton. Yep. How much of a player? I don't know. But you think they're going to be much better than they were last year. They got to be.
And you've got an obvious barrier in the division with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Exactly. So how do you, even though you play Kansas City tough, how do you get over that hurdle and potentially another hurdle in the Denver Broncos? Can you stay healthy enough, and can you do a good enough job, Brandon Staley, mm-hmm. of out-coaching the rest of these coaches, you know, Sean Payton and Andy Reid? Can you out-coach those guys? I'm not even talking about the L.A. Raiders. They got stuff to figure out themselves. But can you put together each and every week a good enough package, a game plan to win games? You got the talent.
That's my biggest question, mm-hmm. is really, and it's not even what can Brandon Staley do this season. It's when are the Chargers going to move on from Brandon Staley? Because they've got the talent. I mean, Justin Herbert is a heck of a young quarterback. They have found their quarterback of the future now that they've signed Justin Herbert to this massive deal. They've got talent around him offensively. They've got the horses defensively. They can be a competitive team in the AFC. Mm-hmm. I just feel like the past couple of years, since Justin Herbert was drafted by the Chargers, it was Brandon Staley that has held this team back. He always wants to go for it on fourth down. He doesn't like to kick a field goal. He's one of those very analytically driven coaches, and I think that analytics have a place in football, but sometimes, and I'll always say this about analytics, don't let analytics blind you from what your brain and what your eyes can show you. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes Brandon Staley lets the analytics blind him from doing what seems like the obvious move. So I think I don't think that Justin Herbert or this Chargers team can realize its full potential as long as Brandon Staley is the head coach. So to me, it's how far can this team get you in spite of Brandon Staley? And when can you find a good, like, Sean Payton type of quarterback guru coach to pair with Justin Herbert to take them to the next level? I don't believe in Brandon Staley.
Mm. I'll give you what the Athletic put.
Yeah.
This is Daniel Popper, their beat writer. Will Kellen Moore succeed in elevating Justin Herbert in the offense? So that's an interesting ingredient that they have added.
Right.
Kellen Moore comes over from the Cowboys, and now will be running the LA offense. And I do think it goes along the lines of what we're saying. The sum of the parts hasn't been there. Mm-hmm. The individual talent is there. Now, they need Keenan Allen to stay on the field.
Yeah.
Mike Williams. It seems like those two guys are always battling something. They've had a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. And I think a Chargers fan who's trying to defend them and even defend Staley will say, look, they've had a little bit of like the Titans. They've had a lot of bad luck with critical players. Remember, Bosa has missed a lot of time. So that if they get a little luck with that, that will probably help. But I think Kellen Moore is a big question. That's a big one.
And what is his involvement in play calling in the offense, and who has final say?
Yeah, if about Kellen Moore, go for it stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. If Kellen Moore takes over the offense completely, then I can believe a little bit more in the Chargers, and I can get on board with it a little bit more. But I think that you got to get – if it's not Kellen Moore, then you got to find that offensive guru to pair with Justin Herbert. But maybe it is Kellen Moore. I'm excited to see that duo. We'll go to the NFC next, our biggest questions for our NFC team of the day, plus your thoughts as well, Caroline. Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game and the game Nashville app. We are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. So every day we're going to be going through some of our biggest question marks for teams throughout the league. We'll do an AFC team and an NFC team every day. Our Chargers questions are really, when can they get past that hump that they've been at? They've got the pieces. They've got the quarterback. Just signed Justin Herbert to the massive deal. But when can they push through and be a legitimate AFC contender? But switching over to the other side, in the NFC, the New York Giants. What are our biggest questions about the Giants this season?
Football Giants. The biggest question is for me is, you know, Daniel Jones. Can he, you know, put together back-to-back, you know, good seasons? Mm-hmm. We know what he looked like, you know, prior to Saquon being fully healthy. Mm-hmm. His numbers, you could just look at the year before. His numbers were completely down. And then insert Saquon for 17 games, and his numbers passing double, I believe, almost double. He becomes – his completion rating goes up, percentage goes up, touchdowns goes up. So can Daniel Jones continue to ascend? Can he be what the Giants – because they took a chance on him last year. Mm-hmm. They got a new head coach. Everybody was new, but they GM, but they stuck with him. I don't think the GM was new, but the head coach knew. They stuck with him, and they gave him another year to prove himself. And what happened? He proved himself. Why? Because Saquon Barkley was on the field. Can he do it again? Can he get better this year now that Saquon's under contract, ready to go? Everything will be predicated on how well Daniel Jones plays this season. Saquon, if he stays healthy, he's going to be fine. The receiving core, a few unknowns, but it all hinges on whether Daniel Jones can continue to make that progression upward and not flatten out or go down.
And the Saquon thing is such a big thing because I still have scars from having him be my first round draft pick the year that he went down very early in the season. And so they've got to be walking on eggshells a little bit, you know, from his camp because, yes, he's signed, but he does have an injury history. And there are a lot of people that are curious, right, how this is going to go because it's not a great situation to be in. It's just the reality, I guess. But let's take that as a given, that Saquon, I do wonder if he's going to be high first-round pick in fantasy, back up to that level, because last year he was probably a steal. Mm-hmm. Right, he probably wasn't one of the top running backs picked.
I don't think I would have touched Saquon with a 10-foot pole in the fantasy draft.
But he had that kind of workhorse, mm-hmm. Touches that you love on your fantasy team. Because even if he doesn't score 3 touchdowns, he's going to get you points with catches and yards, etc. Another interesting move that the Giants made. They haven't had the sexiest group of wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar? Okay. Remember last year they even traded Kadarius Toney during the season to the Chiefs. What did they do this offseason? Well, the wide receiver market wasn't sexy, so they traded for Darren Waller, a guy that has got a lot of talent for a tight end, right? This is a game-changing guy. They got him from the Raiders. So what does he look like? I mean, that's an interesting fantasy question because that's a dominant guy who had injury issues last year. Remember, he had a bad game against the Titans here. That was, if you could argue that if he had had a great game, there was some passes that he had a chance to catch that he didn't come down with. That could have. It was a razor's edge kind of game that the Titans really needed.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting signing. But I think the biggest thing for me is I don't have one specific question, but it's maybe one big umbrella, one big bubble of questions. Between Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. They're both just got signed to new deals, and I know Saquon's is a one-year deal, and there's still maybe a little bit of tension between he and the organization given what they went through with his contract negotiations and the franchise tag. But Daniel Jones just got signed to a big deal, not the monstrous Justin Herbert's kind of Jalen Hurts kind of big-time quarterback deal, but $40 million a year. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to scoff at. Mm-mm. And then Saquon Barkley just signing that one-year deal. So what do they look like coming off of contract years? Because in those contract years, Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones had the best year of his career. Mm-hmm. Saquon Barkley had the best year since 2018, and he was able to stay consistently healthy. So are they able to, one, stay healthy? Are they able to not just recreate what they did last year, but build upon what they did last year? It's really just what does the growth look like in year two? Because I saw it once. Can you do it again is my biggest question.
And can you do it in the division with the Eagles and the Cowboys? That's not easy.
It's a tough division.
And going back to the NFC least years when all of those teams just kind of stunk.
Yeah.
It was not that long ago. That might be top three, one of the most competitive divisions in football, if not the most competitive division in football. It's a good point.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Giants, if everybody can stay healthy, and more importantly, if Saquon can stay healthy, then I think everything falls on Daniel Jones. Even if he does stay upright, can he build on and get better, like you said, from last year's numbers? Mm-hmm. You would hope that as long as Saquon stays injury-free that he will, but you just never know.
It's also a year where, remember at this time last year, they played the Titans in the first games. We all remember Jared was making fun of the Giants. They can't possibly lose to the Giants. There's no way you can lose to the Giants. And the Giants ended up being a pretty darn good team.
Yeah.
But they had no expectations last year. They were supposed to stink.
They were
so
the
Jared wasn't
Giants.
Wrong, right?
Yeah.
So it was a surprise. But then they come out of the gate, and they are sort of the darling underdog team that's surprising everybody. Now they have an expectation level. So how do they play with those expectations? That's always a challenge.
And I think looking at Daniel Jones's contract, I mean, $40 million a year. 5 years ago, $40 million a year would be like the best quarterback in the league. Now $40 million is like run of the mill, like, meh, you're average.
You can play in his league.
Yeah. You're starting quarterback, which is crazy. But I think with Daniel Jones, as far as he's concerned, is he can he just do enough? He doesn't have to be the superstar. Yeah. Doesn't have to be the savior. Can he do enough?
Well, we'll see this season, because if many believe in the schedule and how hard a schedule can be and all this other stuff, their schedule is going to be a little bit harder than it was last year.
I hope one day I have a job where I can be average and make $40 million a year.
Yeah, I'm average. C plus. Give me $40 million.
$50 million. Yeah, appreciate that. That's going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow live at training camp at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.